Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Whether you want to
buy, buy, buy.
In a bear market or
sell, sell, sell
in a bull market, Jim Cramer can help you become a better investor. Mad Money, weeknights 6 Eastern. Listen to CNBC on the Odyssey app.
Taking you up to 6:30 tonight. Grant and Danny on the Fan, presented by the law firm of Condori and Murat. They'll help you update your last will and testament. They'll set up a revocable trust for you and your family. Huge Commanders fans, big DC sports fans, go schedule a consultation with their estate planning attorneys today at kmlawyers.com. Let them know you heard about them on the show. We sent you. You'll get a discount. That's kmlawyers.com. It's a Wizards Wednesday. We've got tickets to see the Wiz and the Suns. Wednesday on the Fan means a chance to win tickets, so here's the deal. Caller 10 at 800-636-1067. The tickets are for Thursday, January 16th. With Phoenix in town, join the team as they celebrate life and legacy of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Highlight his many accomplishments for the complete Wizards schedule. Tickets as well. Go to thefandc.com. By the way, I saw yesterday that Bradley Beal's coming off the bench and they're trying to trade him. And to that I say,
I say, not my problem.
Let's get to the guest hotline and welcome onto the show a buddy of the program, a guy whose content I love consuming, Kevin Clark of ESPN, is with us to go around the horn ahead of the NFL playoffs. What's up, Kevin? How are you?
I'm just stunned about the Bradley Beal news. I can't believe that trade didn't work out, guys.
Pretty shocking.
There wasn't a decade of evidence that this wasn't going to work.
Unbelievable, man. It was one of those things that was so funny to me that, oh, God, we're going to do the Bradley Beal thing again on the show?
We're still doing it?
We're doing it. I thought I was done. It was just like they just kept treating him like he was a superstar. I'm not a basketball scout. It takes 8 minutes to watch to go,
really good player.
Let's not super-duper-ooper-duper max this guy. Let's not do that. And they just kept doing it over and over and over.
Yeah, I mean, I could do this all day with the problems with the NBA and the way they you know, everybody treat certain guys and the way the max contract is affects everything. But you can say the same thing in our dumb league with quarterback contracts. So who are we to throw stones?
This is a good point in our glass houses.
Indeed.
All right, let's get to the playoffs this weekend. Why don't we begin, because you're on in D.C., with the Commanders and the Bucks.
Yeah.
Sunday Night Football. Your thoughts on the matchup that Washington drew here?
I love this matchup. I'm not, like, in love with the first round of these playoffs. I think the divisional round is going to be, like, historic when you think about you could get Lamar versus Josh, all that stuff. But I really like this matchup. And what I like about it is, first of all, the Bucks. I got a couple mea culpas about both these teams. I was wrong about Dan Quinn. I was wrong about Cliff Kingsbury. More wrong about Cliff than Dan. I'll explain that in a second. But with the Bucks, like, I think everybody in the media since Tom Brady retired has been sitting around saying, "Oh well, you know, we're waiting for the real NFC South champ," and treating the Bucks like substitute teachers. And they just keep playing solid football and winning that division. And you know, they were able to, and they've had some, you know, some hiccups this year. They didn't play that good against New Orleans, but I just like what Baker Mayfield does. I like the pressure they're able to consistently generate. And then on the Commander side, like, Jaden Daniels has been unbelievable. I knew he was going to have a really high floor year one. I went on Bill Simmons' podcast in August and named him, like, basically one of my top five guys to watch, just because I knew what the floor was. And I think I was even on with you guys in August and talked a little bit about that. But what I'm intrigued to see is how much he's grown since week one. I think he was the most scramble yards he had all year when they played in week one. How has he gotten different? Which team, frankly, can stop the run better? Obviously, Washington's had problems with explosive runs this year. I just want to see how these teams have grown over the course of the year. I'm fascinated by it.
So, Kevin, let's stay in the NFC here, big picture. So Detroit's obviously got the one seed. They got the bye, so you would favor them. But just in terms of everything else, who's got the best setup here? In other words, combine whatever factors you want, whether it's quarterback, coaching, health, momentum. Just who are you looking at and going, you know what? They've got a good road because.
Well, I mean, here's the issue, guys, about the NFC. Is it the answer is Philadelphia, but we don't know if their quarterback is playing. And even today, okay, so Wednesday and Thursday are the big practice days. We haven't seen Jalen Hurts in 3 weeks. And, you know, to me, and who knows if he would have played last week if that game mattered or whatever. But, like, you know, Diana Rossini tweeted out that, you know, it all comes down to how he feels about things after this practice, which is happening basically in the last hour. And so, in theory, because of that roster, because of all of the other warts on the NFC teams, I'm looking at Philadelphia and saying, yeah, if Jalen Hurts is healthy, then they're going to win the NFC. But then that's a pretty big if, guys. I mean, we could see Tanner McKee here this weekend, and they could lose that game. And so, remember, with concussions, it's not up to him. It's not up to Jalen Hurts. It's about independent neurologists and all that stuff. And you never know. And guys, we've seen concussions linger for weeks and weeks and weeks and months and months and months, and it's obvious. And those guys really can't play. And so it's really hard for me to say that Philadelphia has this runway because they should, but then their quarterback isn't healthy. I mean, Detroit, you know, I was on the radio earlier and I was talking about Detroit's run, and it's like the Top Gun scene. Like, you know, you need two consecutive miracles here because they keep getting them because they've got so many guys on IR. And they've got so many, and Aiden Hutchinson still, I think, is their sack leader and their pressure leader. He hasn't played since early October. Aleem McNeil, obviously, has been out for a number of weeks. Like, they're able to generate miracles in a sport where you shouldn't be able to do that. And so, to me, if Jalen Hurts isn't healthy, it's going to be Detroit, just because I can't bet against these miraculous happenings. But if Jalen Hurts is healthy, I think it's going to be Detroit, and I don't think it's going to be Philadelphia. It's going to be particularly close.
So let's double click on that, because I don't understand why nobody's giving Green Bay a chance in this game. Like, 2 weeks ago, when they were getting ready to play Minnesota, they were every bit as good as the Vikings, maybe the Lions. They were creeping up in the division. They went into that Vikings game. If it goes differently, they're playing for the top of the conference potentially. Now, maybe the answer is Jordan Love's elbow. He's limited in practice. He's saying today he's hopeful to play. And that's the whole reason that they're 4.5-point dogs. But, like, other than the Broncos with a rookie quarterback in Buffalo and the Steelers who can't move the ball, nobody's a bigger underdog this week than the Packers, who were awesome as of 2 weeks ago. What am I missing?
Well, I picked the Packers to make the Super Bowl before the season. And so if I could pick the Packers, I would. I would love to pick the Packers. But first of all, you mentioned Jordan Love's health. I really think that's something. I think he's been banged up all year. I think that he came out of that game on Sunday. Malik Willis came in, and I think it's something to watch. Again, it's really hard for me to project out when you're dealing with the health of the quarterback, because it's such an if-then. If Jordan Love was fully healthy, I think it's completely different. I think they do have a chance. We'll see what happens there. The other thing is, I've been really disappointed. And again, I'm sure you guys have had this, where you have a take, you buy stock in a team, and then it doesn't pan out, and, like, you're the guy who hates them the most because they made you look stupid. I was disappointed with how the Packers' defense developed this year. They were going to be able to generate a lot more pressure. They're so athletic. Brian Gutekunst really bets on athleticism. I thought with the new DC, Jeff Hafley, they take a step forward. Jaire Alexander is on IR. He's out for the year. Lord knows what's going on with that situation. And so for me, everything that I was doing as far as predicting Green Bay was predicated on the defense taking a leap that has not come. So would I be surprised if Jordan Love goes out there, if he's fully healthy and has some awesome game? No, I think Jordan Love is one of the best young quarterbacks in this game. I think he's going to probably make a Super Bowl at some point in his career. But for this team, it's all been uneven. It's all been inconsistent. Christian Watson's out for the season now after an ACL last Sunday. Like, every little advantage I thought they were going to have, they simply don't have. And so, to me, they're not on Philadelphia's level. They're not even on Detroit's level.
Kevin Clark with us here on GND, at By Kevin Clark on Elon's app. So you mentioned Pittsburgh, their opponent Baltimore. This is it's going to brush up against shouty show type stuff here, Kevin. So forgive the phrasing of the question, but what's on the line for the Ravens and Lamar Jackson here? A guy that, in my opinion, should win his third MVP this year, whether we will or won't, and who knows. But just been so incredible, but the playoff success hasn't necessarily followed. Kind of what's on the line for them here, especially kind of in this first round against a known rival where they're heavily favored and they should be. But if they don't do it again this year, what's on the line for them?
Well, first of all, I want to preface this by saying that the Ravens are really good. They're a good franchise, and they're really good ignoring the noise. And I think the biggest indicator of that is if you're in the facility, like in a week like this, or next week if they play the Bills, the outside narrative never seeps in. And there's a lot of franchises that are really bad. And for a couple decades, you guys had one right there in town where the outside media narrative was always was top of mind with everybody in the building. And Baltimore does a great job of keeping that noise out typically. That starts with ownership and empowering the coaching staff and Ozzie Newsome and Eric DaCosta. And they don't care what's going on our, you know, the morning shows on ESPN. And so certainly, you know, the running back's not going to care. Having said that, if you lose this game, everything's under evaluation, right? Like it's the Stephen A. Smith meme when he's on General Hospital. You're under surveillance. Like everybody's under surveillance in Baltimore. Does that mean John Harbaugh gets an extra look? Does that mean some of the coaching staff gets an extra look? I don't know. I mean, they drafted well. I think the defensive coordinator hire has looked better over the past 6 weeks, let's say. Didn't look good in the first 10 weeks. I don't know what that is, but I don't think you can just roll into next season if they lose this weekend and say everything is going to be the same. I was so disappointed last year. There was a stat that just burned in my brain, guys, that they faced 38 light boxes against the Chiefs, and they threw 36 times in those situations. That was coaching malpractice. So now you get another chance. It's a harder road because you don't have the home game. You don't have the one seed. You don't have the bye. You don't have all that stuff. But they've got to salvage this era of Ravens football. They have to, and they have to win this weekend, or else I don't know what the Ravens reaction is, but it can't be nothing.
It's a great point. And nationally, I think, you know, your quarterback's going to pay the price one way or the other from a narrative standpoint, which doesn't really matter to your point. The point that actually does matter is that Baltimore is going to have to really take a look in the mirror and maybe do something different moving forward.
I mean, but that's the thing about modern roster building, modern quarterbacking, the quarterback's not going anywhere. You're not trading Lamar Jackson. You can't. And you wouldn't want to. What's even fair value for Lamar Jackson? So it's going to be on the coaching staff. It's going to be on the structure of the organization, maybe some defensive personnel, whatever. But, like, the quarterbacks are, like, you know, in the first 2 years after they sign their deal, it's like Supreme Court justices, you know, like they're not going anywhere, especially if they're good. You can cut them if they're really bad, like Carson Wentz, but you would never want to do that with Lamar Jackson. He's going to be there. So then it comes, if they lost this weekend, who else is a scapegoat? Cause it's not going to be him.
Another game that it seems like, you know, I'm taking crazy pills. Cause I'm the only person that thinks this. Apparently I thought what Sean McVay did in week 18 was a mistake to opt for Detroit, Minnesota loser over Washington with a rookie quarterback coming to your building. But what I'm seeing is not only from the odds where the Vikings are only 1.5-point favorites, but most of the people that I care about and listen to and watch, a lot of them are kind of sneaky on the Rams here. They really like them. I don't know if it was the earlier season matchup there where they beat the Vikings. The stat I keep seeing come up is that the Vikings blitz more than anybody, and Matthew Stafford eats the blitz for lunch like I eat a Jersey Mike sub. And so that's just going to happen, and that's how this game's going to go. But man, oh man, I mean, the Vikings have been the better team all year long, and it seems like one bad Sam Darnold performance in primetime, and nobody cares about that anymore.
I thought it was so funny, guys, the amount of people who were like, well, Darnold shouldn't get a contract anymore. And it's like, whoa, wait. We went from Darnold's going to make $150 million to Darnold is you know, going to go be a backup and and with the Chargers next season. What the heck just happened here? If you're letting one game affect your roster building like that, you're probably a bad franchise. I don't think the Vikings are. I think, by the way, I've been on this all year. They should tag and trade him and roll with JJ McCarthy next year. Okay, but with the Rams, I agree with the blitz point. The Vikings, I forget what the actual stat was, but the Vikings, because they're so aggressive, they let free receivers go all the time at like the highest rate in the NFL. I think Puka Nacua is going to get open. I think Matthew Stafford is going to hang in there and find that ability. I think their defense in Los Angeles is criminally underrated because of how many young guys it is. That's just the two Florida State guys, Braden Fisk and Jared Verse, and Cam Kitchens in the back. Cam Curl is there. It's a really fast, young defense that's cheap and is only going to get better. I'm going Rams in this one. I think that Sean McVay is an amazing coach. I think Matthew Stafford gives them the quarterback advantage. They're obviously going to be at home. I probably agree with you that they probably should have tried to play the Commanders a little bit more. But I also think that, listen, Sean McVay doesn't play his guys in the preseason. He really values rest. And in an era where there's no buys, or it was only one bye, rather, and they didn't have a chance at it, in an era where you're playing more games than you ever have before, I don't hate to say, hey, you know what, screw it. Let's just get these guys an extra 5 days of rest, just let their bodies reset. I don't hate that. I think Sean McVay is the only guy who's kind of figured out what load management should look like in the NFL, and he's obviously made it work. And so I think from a vibes perspective, from a rest perspective, I think he's done a nice job, and I'll defer to him on that.
Speaking of buys, Kansas City's got one. They did not care, clearly, about that last game against Denver. No. Little extra incentive maybe to make sure Joe Burrow didn't make the postseason. That's only semi-kidding, by the way, Kevin. But they feel inevitable to me. Like, they're just now playing with their food in the regular season at this point, right? I mean, is it like Thanos with the Infinity Stones here? They're just inevitable?
Yes. I mean, like, I it's so weird because their post-take and post-analysis, because all of their stats say they shouldn't be this good. They rarely score 30 points. All of the records, like, have you guys seen the, like, the when scoring under 30 points graphic? Mm-hmm. And it's like the teams that do it as often as they do, it's like the Giants. It's like Tommy DeVito, you know? Mm-hmm. And yet the Chiefs are able to do this sustainably. Now, part of this is how good the defense is. Part of this is that Mahomes is just supernaturally good with Kelce and those guys at just finding his little holes and doing enough. And some of it's just luck. I mean, to have the block kick against Denver and all that stuff, that's not going to happen reliably in order to get you to 16-1 or 14-2 or sorry, 15-2. But yeah, I mean, like I compare Mahomes to Jordan, and the reason I do is because Jordan, unlike LeBron, change the legacies of everybody around him. And there are going to be people, whether that's Joe Burrow, Josh Allen, Lamar, at least a few of these guys, who, when they're looking back on their career, they're going to be ringless, and they're going to wish Patrick Mahomes never picked up a football or he stayed in baseball, right? That's Jordan to me. That's what Jordan did to all the guys in the 90s who retired ringless. That's why Mahomes, to me, is Jordan. And so until someone knocks him off, like, I'm afraid it's a little bit – remember – 2014, after the run of Cincinnati, how many people said, well, this is the end of Brady? And then everybody looked stupid. Obviously, they won the Super Bowl that year, and everybody was afraid to do any takes on Brady from then on out. And I wasn't one of the people who doubted Brady at that point, but even I was like, yeah, I'm never saying a bad word about Tom Brady ever again, because he can just figure stuff out. And that's with this Chiefs team. I think we've all learned our lesson by now. Like, don't say anything about the Chiefs. They're going to make you look stupid. And once that happens, you're almost post-analysis.
Kevin Clark with us on Grant and Danny. All right, before we let you go, I guess who's feeling the most heat, in your opinion, this weekend? Fair or not, whether it's reasonable or not, it could be a player, it could be a coach, it could be a team. Who do you think is feeling the most heat in this first round?
Well, the Ravens and the Bills can't lose. That's number one. I'm a little surprised that the Steelers, like, they're about to lose, and it feels like maybe nobody cares. Like, they're in such a tailspin, and Russell Wilson can't do anything. T.J. Watt has really disappeared over the past few weeks.
By the way, is Russell Wilson going to be back there? Kev, that felt like a lock a month
so.
Ago.
I was like, I remember 2 weeks ago I had a guest on my show, and I was like, is Russell Wilson coming back? I'm like, I don't think so. And I was like, what? Like, and now the more they play, the more it looks obvious that they should kind of go fish in the quarterback market. But I mean, I'm looking, and again, this is pure speculation, but like, you're looking at this Pittsburgh thing and you're thinking, do they need to just shake it up? Is Mike Tomlin going to need to, you know, shouldn't the Bears just try to pay him $20 million a year? Shouldn't the Jets try to pay him $20 million a year? I was talking to somebody earlier today and I was saying, you know, what those franchises need with bad ownership is a coach who can tell the owner to go away, stay in his office. Don't talk to him about Madden ratings. Don't even open your mouth. And Mike Tomlin could do that. And listen, by the way, Snyder tried that with and it didn't work. But bad ownership needs good coaching to kind of course correct. And if I'm one of those teams, I'm really trying to trade for Mike Tomlin, because it just seems like at some point everybody might want to try to start something new.
Kevin, awesome with us as always, buddy. Enjoy the weekend.
Thanks, guys. Enjoy the games.
Kevin, be good. Buddy. There he is. Kevin Clark of ESPN. Six games, Saturday, Sunday, Monday. Cannot wait. We are getting closer and closer. You're listening to Grant and Danny next right here on The Fan. Outside of Jaden Daniels, who's going to have to be great for Washington to get a road playoff win? It'd be their first playoff win overall going back 19 years. Who's got to shine outside of Daniels to make it happen? That's the question next on G&D. We will get into which Commanders got to be great other than Jaden Daniels if they're going to beat the Tampa Bay Bucs in just a moment. But we really haven't dove too much into the matchups for this weekend in the NFL playoffs. So let's rapid fire go through all of these games with a couple of stats I found last night from an NFL release that I found interesting. And we'll just run through these games one by one here. We start off Saturday afternoon, 4:30 East time kick. Chargers, Texans, LA's the 5 seed, Houston's the 4 seed, yet the Chargers are the favorites in this game by 2.5 points. Games on CBS, broadcast crew is going to be Ian Eagle and Charles Davis. Chargers led the NFL in scoring defense this year, 17.7 points per game allowed. They're one of 4 teams in the AFC to win at least 6 road games as well. Chiefs, Ravens, Bengals are the other 3. Meanwhile, for the Texans, Danny, they can rush the quarterback. DN tandem, Will Anderson, 11 sacks, Danielle Hunter, 12 sacks, the only AFC teammates with at least 11 sacks each this season.
This is a tough one to predict. I mean, they're one of the 2 road favorites this weekend, along with Minnesota, who's a slight road favorite, talking about the Chargers. This is a good quality team. They're not great, though, right? You could see some of their slip-ups, and they had a softer schedule. They harvested their nuts, Eddie Jordan style. Not unlike Washington, to be honest with you. Not a ton of quality wins on their resume. Their offense just feels different when J.K. Dobbins is around. When he's available and he's going, it just feels like there's more open for them. It's the occasional shot to Josh Palmer, but a lot of underneath to Ladd McConkey and handing it off in some different creative ways. You've seen this offense before. It's Baltimore West at this point with a different guy at the helm in terms of Herbert. But this is a pretty good turnaround here where Harbaugh took them from they can't get right to 11 wins in a postseason.
If you watch the Chargers most of this year, probably think Justin Herbert's numbers are pretty terrible. He only threw 23 touchdowns. He only had 3,800 yards this season playing in every game. But the last few weeks, they opened it up offensively. He threw for a season-high 346 in Week 18 with 2 touchdowns. He had 3 touchdowns and 281 yards against the Patriots in Week 17. In fact, he's had 2 or more touchdowns each of the last 4 weeks. In that time, 9 of his 23 touchdowns on the season over the last 4 games. I mean, he had basically 14 touchdowns with a month to play on the year. They just run the ball so much, but he was the hardest quarterback in the league to intercept this year. Just 3 interceptions, something to monitor going into that game. Brings us to Saturday Night Football on Amazon Prime exclusively, so you need the app. 8 o'clock East time kick, Al Michaels snoozing through the play-by-play, Kirk Herbstreit, your low-energy analyst, Kaylee Hartung will be your sideline reporter. 6 seed Pittsburgh, 3 seed Ravens. Baltimore, 3rd team since 2000 to lead the NFL in rushing offense and rushing defense. Pretty good stat.
That's a pretty good number.
188 yards per game on the ground. They allow 80.1. 2 teams in this game, Steelers and Ravens, have not played on Sunday in a month. They'll be the first teams to do that since 2016, as a matter of fact. They played on Saturday in Week 16, Wednesday in Week 17 on Christmas, Saturday in Week 18, and now Saturday in the playoffs. So you got to go back several years to find a team go that long without being in their normal rhythm of playing a Sunday game, but they've both been dealing with it. The Steelers, by the way, beat the Ravens 18-16 in Week 11. The Ravens beat Pittsburgh 34-17, doubled them up. just a couple of weeks ago in Week 16.
From the unofficial Ravens correspondent here at 106.7 The Fan, our guy Matt Valdez, the Ravens had a plus 112 scoring margin versus playoff teams. Point of comparison, for example, Buffalo was minus 15 over the course of the year. Detroit, who beat the brakes off of just about everybody, was only plus 36. So again, Baltimore, plus 112 over quality opponents. It was their inexplicable losses to teams that aren't that good that prevented them from being up there with Kansas City and some of the other groups. But no Zay Flowers, I wonder what that's going to look like. That's assuming he doesn't play. We don't know yet, but haven't seen much of him. I can't imagine with that short turnaround he'd be good to go on Saturday, but maybe get by with this one because Pittsburgh is flailing. But longer term for the postseason, they need him.
He did not practice today. The game's on Saturday. So this is effectively like a Thursday going into a Sunday. In terms of the injury report, they're 9.5-point favorites over the Steelers. Give me Pittsburgh in those points every single time with Mike Tomlin at the helm. Do the Ravens win? Yeah, probably. I would be surprised if they didn't. But 9.5 is a ton. I absolutely think Pittsburgh can keep this game close. Let's go to Sunday. Game 1 of 3, early window, 1 East time on CBS. Jim Nantz, Tony Romo in the booth, Tracy Wolfson, Jay Feely on the sidelines, respectively. Broncos, Bills, number 7 Denver, number 2 seed Buffalo. Denver led the NFL with 63 sacks this year. They also ranked 3rd in scoring defense, 18.3 points per game. Everyone wants to make this out to be Bo Nix, rookie quarterback, can he do the unthinkable? He might not need to. Their defense is good enough to steal a playoff game, perhaps, if Josh Allen doesn't protect the football, something he did brilliantly all year as the favorite to win the MVP award in betting circles. The Bills allowed fewer sacks thanks to Josh Allen, who was the hardest quarterback in the league. The sack had the best pressure-to-sack percentage in the league. Fewest sacks allowed in football, Buffalo, 14 this year. 2nd in points per game scored offensively, 30.9. So get this, Danny. This marks the 7th playoff game since 1970 where you have the two teams playing, one who's the hardest to sack and the other who gets the most sacks. Like one of those fun matchups.
I like that.
2 since 2000. 7 since 1970 in terms of games where that's been the case.
So here's the thing I'm thinking about here for Buffalo and their postseason run. The two quality opponents, at least in terms of offenses that they played over the last couple of months, scored 44 and 42 points on them, respectively. Their defense is buoyed by the fact they got to play the Patriots twice in the last 3 weeks, the Jets, who were broken offensively, a 49ers team that was bereft of talent at that point. They got fat against the Colts, I think, kind of down the stretch. Against good offensive opponents, and I don't know if Denver is or is not. I don't know what's real and what's not with them. I mean, I know Denver's taken advantage of some bad defenses in their own right, and Bo Nix deserves credit for a tremendous year. But that's kind of the sneaky thing I'm watching here for Buffalo and some of the good teams that they've played against. The Ravens scored 35 against them, and I can go on. They've given up some pretty gaudy yardage and point totals to good offenses this year. It's not quite the same Bills defense of recent years past.
Packers, Eagles, 7-2, Green Bay, Philly, Lincoln Financial Field, Sunday, game 2 of 3, 4:30 East time kick on Fox. Their A-team, Kevin Burkhardt, Tom Brady on the call of a playoff game for the first time. Maybe he elevates his game in the booth for the playoffs like he did at quarterback. Aaron Andrews on the sideline, Tom Rinaldi as well. The Eagles beat the Packers 34-29. That was Friday Night Football out of Brazil, week 1. This was the 2nd game of the NFL season out of 272. Saquon Barkley went for 132 yards, 109 on the ground, and scored 3 touchdowns in that week 1 game, which was a precursor of things to come. He ended up leading the NFL with 2,283 scrimmage yards and 2,005 rushing yards, which was 8th most ever. Really would have had a chance to legitimately break the record if they let him. He finished 100 yards shy and didn't play in Week 18. 25 combined regular season wins between these two teams, the most ever for a wild card round game. Green Bay, Philadelphia, in Philly, couple of banged up quarterbacks with Jordan Love on the injury report with an elbow, and Jalen Hurts coming back from a concussion.
Yeah, the new format's going to give us some more of these, right? Where some gaudy win totals don't just get bye weeks anymore. So, yeah, you touched on it. That's the storyline to me, is who's healthy, who's able to do normal quarterback things for both these teams. Both of those guys are the engines that really drive things. For Hurts, it's that RPO game. It's how good he is, kind of, you know, doing the ball handling, whether it's leaving it in the gut of Saquon Barkley or Gainwell or whoever's back there, keeping it himself, or throwing that, you know, some of those quick passes to Devontae Smith and A.J. Brown and you know, tight ends and everybody else. When he's not there, their offense could still be good. You saw the Kenny Pickett torch Washington a couple times down in the second half, but it's just not the same because that one key ingredient, the multiple option passing attack, he's so good at that. Philadelphia, a legitimate Super Bowl contender with him.
We're going to get back into the Commanders and the Bucks. Sunday Night Football, 8 Eastern kick, NBC, Mike Tirico, Chris Collinsworth, and Melissa Stark in just a few minutes, which leaves us with the Vikings and the Rams on Monday night. 5-seed Minnesota, 4-seed L.A., 8 East kick on ESPN, Joe Buck on the call, Troy Aikman providing analysis, Lisa Salters, Laura Rutledge, both working sidelines. The Rams defeated the Vikings 30-20 at SoFi Stadium in Week 8. Remember, Matt Stafford threw 4 touchdowns in that win, and there was a controversial no-call on a late face mask of Sam Darnold in the end zone. Remember watching that end of that game at Yard House in Springfield, and people were livid that Sam Darnold didn't get the call and the Vikings didn't get to keep moving the football. So it was a big, surprising win at the time for the Rams. And the Vikings, until the final weekend of the season, I don't think they lost again after that game, actually, in Week 8. But the other storyline from that game was the 4 touchdowns from Stafford. He feasted on the Minnesota blitz. He was as good as there was in the league this year against the blitz. Nobody blitzes more than Brian Flores. These two teams last played in the playoffs in the highest scoring division round game ever back in January of 2000, 25 years ago this month, a 49-37 Rams win over Minnesota with Kurt Warner at the controls.
The Rams won 9 out of 11. They did it again. They did the same thing they did last year where they started off terribly, basically gave away the month of September, even early October, had their bye week, started to get healthy, ripped off 3 in a row before losing a tight one to Miami, then ripped off, I believe it was, 7 out of 8 or even 8 out of 9, memory serves, with one blowout loss to Philadelphia kind of mixed in there. They're a team that is dangerous, quite frankly. I mean, the offense hasn't really been humming on a consistent basis outside of that game against Buffalo that was so wildly entertaining early December. They haven't had gaudy point totals or yardage totals or otherwise, but you know that's like a coiled snake, very dangerous with their multiple options in the passing game and veteran Matt Stafford slinging it from all sorts of arm angles.
Those are your matchups outside of the Commanders and the Bucks. We'll get back to that game next. The question for you, other than Jaden Daniels, who's got to shine? We've got the answer next on G&D. We're just 2 days away from a postseason version of our Friday field trip. We're going to be in Clarendon out in Arlington at Hyde Social Bar, 2 to 6:30 on Friday. You can come by, watch the show, enjoy food, enjoy drinks, and kick it with us. Look forward to hanging out with everybody and getting ready for the first playoff game the Commanders will be taking part in since 2020.
It's going to be a blast, man. It's a little playoff pep rally action in Hyatt Social. I've heard very good things, by the way. I've not been yet. I plan on being there, obviously, on Friday with you all. But
rave reviews on the food at this bar as well.
Indeed. That is a thing. I got a couple locals there in the Clarendon area that have told me wonderful, wonderful things about Hyatt Social. I can't wait, man.
Yeah, it's going to be a good time. So the question we're asking listeners right now, 800-636-1067, Danny. We know Jaden Daniels got to be special. If your quarterback doesn't play well, you don't have much of a chance. And especially for this team because he's just so much a part of their offense. And everything that they do is a dual threat, running the football more than any quarterback did just about this year, certainly on scrambles. You see the stat that came out? He scrambled 25 more times than any other QB.
Yeah, I couldn't believe that list, by the way. Right? So, like, Lamar Jackson, for example, ran it 140 times. You're telling me that 45 of those weren't scrambles? They were all planned?
That's exactly what I'm telling
Same
you.
Same with Josh Allen? I don't know. Just that number seemed crazy to me. I saw it, reacted to it, but it just tells you that's nuts compared to everybody else.
So it's a PFF stat, and I believe it's based on once you've set up on the in the pocket and how long after the snap you leave the pocket, essentially.
Gotcha.
For the most part, you can kind of tell what a scramble is with your eyes, but you have to have an actual definition, right? Mm-hmm. But yeah, 25 more than anybody else, which is moderately unsustainable, but certainly worked this year.
Without a doubt.
Hard to argue with the results. for Daniels scrambling that much this season. But who's your answer other than Daniels? Who's
got
to be great?
Got a few different guys, but I'll start right here at the top. Austin Eckler. They need something easy. And we usually think of easy as over the top, one play, 80-yard, touchdown, whatever, right? The DeSean Jackson, the Tyreek Hill. To me, it's helping set up something on first down to help kind of stay ahead of the sticks. It's, you know, Eckler turns a nothing into something, takes five and turns it into 15, takes three, turns it into nine. Just because, A, he's got a nose for it. It's hard to bring down. He's elusive in space. And they need something out of running backs that, frankly, hasn't been there since he's been out. And I think it's going to be an Austin Eckler game. I think he gets the ball early. I'm not saying it's going to be exactly like Philadelphia part one, where they started Eckler left, Eckler right. But it might be where they start Eckler left, Eckler right. I mean, that's what I would do, certainly, is to establish that before I got to some other things that I wanted to do. I need a couple chain-moving motions. I think Eckler has to have double-digit touches and be really effective.
Zane Gonzalez, the kicker. I can't miss kicks. Mm. And on top of that, ideally I'd like to hit something from 50-plus, where he is 0 for 1 this season. He actually missed both of his kicks, if you remember, in that Tennessee Titans game. One from 50-plus, one from 40 to 49. He's 2 for 2 since. He only kicked one field goal in the 40 to 49 range this past week. Week before that, he was 1 for 1 with a kick between 30 and 39. So really hadn't been tested a whole lot, but there's no margin for error in these playoff games. I have been worried about the field goal situation backfiring on this team for weeks on end, and you just can't afford it or have it on the road in a playoff game. So I'll say Zane Gonzalez has to be excellent. If you want a guy on defense, Lattimore's an easy answer, covering Mike Evans, coming back from injury, didn't have a great game in one of his two games when he went head-to-head with A.J. Brown, who's one of the best receivers in the league. But you don't really have a whole lot of wiggle room here when it comes to slowing the Bucs' offense down. If Mike Evans is feasting and he's beating Lattimore and getting PI calls and he goes 6 for 105 with, you know, three PIs for another 50 yards or something, you saw what happened in the Eagles game.
Yeah.
Philly moved the ball with ease, and if Hurts didn't get hurt, they might have scored 40 points in that game. You need Lattimore to be outstanding, and he doesn't need to take Evans out of the game. That's probably unrealistic, but he needs to minimize his impact to the point where now you can just allow the other 10 guys to worry about everything else. Lattimore on Evans is not going to be a problem. We're not going to get beat handily there. That we're not going to lose the game in that matchup. If Lattimore can be good enough that Evans is just kind of another guy on the field, it's a huge deal.
Cheating here a little bit, but I'm going to go a tandem. Safeties, Martin and Jeremy Chinn. Because of what you just mentioned, there's got to be, you got to be available to help on both Evans. Got to be available for over the middle stuff for McMillan. You got to be available to come up and stuff the run on Bucky Irving. You've got to be everywhere all at once, like that movie that did really well called Everything Everywhere All at Once. That's what the safety tandem has to do. They need to be really, really accountable, really good, nothing easy, downhill, be sure tacklers. This is a tough game, tough matchup, because Tampa is multiple. I mean, you look at how their offense has gone down the stretch here, and Liam Cohen is really just dialing. Everything he points to on that laminated play sheet seems to be working really, really well right now. So to me, that's a big challenge for the safeties.
On offense, if I'm looking for somebody else, I'll go Brian Robinson, just because it seems like they've made the decision they're sinking or swimming with B-Rob. Like, I would give you a little more Chris Rodriguez. I'd mix in a little more Austin Eckler, but they seem to want Robinson to be the guy. They didn't run the ball that much at all in their most recent game, so he was the leader with 5 carries and 10 yards in terms of quantity, in terms of attempts. But before that, it's 13 for him. It's 21, 16 in these recent games. He's going to get his chances. He's got to be a little sharper, a little crisper, a little more explosive. He's got to make people miss. He's got to run through some tackles. I need Brian Robinson's best game in the second half of the season against the Bucs, probably.
How confident are you that you get it?
Well, how could I possibly be?
Yeah.
1 out of 10, a 3. I mean, he's not seeing it well. It's just not working right now.
Yeah, it just feels like there's no burst there at this point. The runs that, even when there's not much going on for him, usually end up at 3.5 or 4, right? Where even he's got to stop his feet, he's running through something. Now it feels like he can't run through it. It feels like if you get him sort of treading water or kind of slowing up towards the line of scrimmage, he can't slam it through there anymore. Just seems like he doesn't have the burst. I don't know what's going on. Maybe we'll find out after the fact. It's like one of those hockey injuries where, like, 2 days after the season ends, you know, the coach is like, yeah, he was out there playing with something really devastating. He's got surgery scheduled for tomorrow. Like, oh, okay, maybe that's the deal. I have no idea. I'm speculating. But it doesn't seem to be the same. I'm with you. I would go Eckler and Rodriguez a lot more.
Speaking of hockey, I've got a Caps power play for you and an audio vault coming up next. He's Danny Ruye. I'm Grant Paulson. You are listening to The Fan.